James Cameron's movie Titanic was inspired by the discovery of the wreckage of the ship on the bottom of the North Atlantic in 1985 by an expedition led by Robert D. Ballard. His ghostly images of the famous ship captivated the world and transformed it into a cultural phenomenon. Nearly 20 years later, Bob Ballard returned to the site to find a drastically altered scene. This new expedition is the subject of a book, Return to the Titanic, a new look at the world's most famous lost ship. Robert Ballard joins us now from the studios of member station WSHU in Fairfield, Connecticut, and it's good to have you back on Talk of the Nation, Bob.
Oh, it's great to talk to you, Neil. How are you?
I'm very well. And by the way, listeners, if you'd like to join the conversation about the Titanic or the future of undersea exploration, our number is 800-989-8255. You can also email us, totn@npr.org. So how bad is the damage that you saw at Titanic?
Well, it's fascinating. As you'll see, not only in the book, but in the next issue of National Geographic magazine, we're able to make an incredible digital mosaic of the ship, using 2,000 digital images. And you can just sit there and actually, and when there are big giant foldouts that National Geographic is so wonderful at doing, you can compare the mosaic we made almost 20 years ago with the mosaic we made just recently. And you can see, you know, it can compare and contrast and see the change that has occurred. Some of it natural change. The ship obviously has been submerged in the ocean for many, many years. And but also you can see where submarines visiting it have altered it, landing sites, things removed, crow's nests knocked down. You can just compare yourself. I think what we're advocating is not that people don't visit the Titanic. We think that that's wonderful, and they should visit it just like they visit the Arizona and Pearl Harbor. We just want them to do it in a way that doesn't alter the ship.
Mm-hmm. By the way, if you'd like to see some of these pictures, and you can't possibly wait for the next issue of Geographic, you can take a peek at least some of them on our website. That's at npr.org. The number of visitors to the ship obviously were spurred by the incredible story that you retold in your first visit to Titanic all those years ago.
Yeah, absolutely. And like I say, we are real, real advocates of people visiting underwater cultural sites, and we think that'll happen more and more. In fact, our expedition out to the Titanic was not only to remap it and give us a new database 20 years later, but also to really test this new technology of remote accessing exploration. We were working with NOAA's wonderful ship. They have a wonderful ship called the Ronald Brown, and it's one of their flagships. And we brought with us our new undersea exploratory technology. And we're getting ready, actually, for a wonderful moment that's going to happen in about 24 months. And that is when America's first ship of exploration goes to sea. We've been successful in convincing Congress and the President of the United States to actually get a new ship. It was a Navy ship called the USNS Capable. You can go Google it and you'll see it. But it's been transferred from the U.S. Navy to NOAA's Office of Ocean Exploration. Along with that, $18 million to add to that ship an incredible new exploratory technology that includes a satellite system, very high bandwidth satellite system, that we were testing on this cruise to the Titanic. In fact, as you recall, we actually were able to come live from the deck of the Titanic with this technology. And what we want to do and what we're doing right now is we're building in Rhode Island at our University of Rhode Island, the Inner Space Center. It's a $14 million facility that will be the hub of the ship of exploration, very much like Houston is to outer space. With this Inner Space Center, we will be in constant communication with NOAA's new ship of exploration, which, by the way, is looking for a name. So if any of the young people out there want to enter the contest to name this new ship of exploration, they should go to NOAA's website and do it. But this ship of exploration will be in going to really where no one has gone before in many parts of the Southern Hemisphere and Western Pacific, but it'll be constantly in communication with the Inner Space Center using this new high-definition pipeline, in particular Internet 2, which is the new pipeline of information within the universities. And we're going to be able to connect all the universities as well as schools to the actual ship of exploration as it explores. So our trip back to the Titanic was really two stories. One was naturally to revisit her, see what's happened to her, collect a new database, and use that. We actually did a live broadcast from the Titanic to the G8 summit. and were successful in getting the United States to join Britain in a new treaty to try to take steps to protect the Titanic for future generations.
By the way, to those of you who thought that Noah only had one ship and it was called the Ark, we are speaking, of course, of the National Oceanographic and Atmospheric Administration, or agency, is it? I forget which one. But
it's the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration.
Gotcha.
It's sort of what we'd like to think of as the wet NASA. Unfortunately, it doesn't have the budget of the other NASA.
Which in complains fact, about its budget, too. So,
well, actually, the program to explore the moons of Saturn would support NOAA's present ocean exploration program for 300 years, so there is a little difference.
Here's an email question from Chris Shields in Kansas City, Missouri. I was wondering what your thoughts and positions were on whether shipwrecks like the Titanic should be left alone as graves at rest at the bottom of the ocean. Of course, the Arizona, which you drew a comparison, is treated as a gravesite.
Correct. I think, you know, it is a tremendous debate, and it's a social debate that needs to be done. Clearly, the deep sea is in many ways a museum. It has probably more history in it than all the museums of the world combined, and the Titanic is certainly the one that people think most of, but there are literally hundreds of thousands of shipwrecks dating way back into time. As you know, you went with us into the Black Sea. You went with us on PT-109. We've been finding that ancient history is highly preserved, particularly in the Black Sea, but also in the Mediterranean where we've been working. And the question is, what do you do with this? What do you do with it? Do you salvage it? Do you leave it? I think it's a mixed bag. I think it's like anything. In some cases, you do. When you can ask people what are the most significant ships beneath the sea, and they say a ship like the Titanic, for example, well, clearly that's the public is speaking. They're saying this is a very special ship and should be treated in a very special way. Other shipwrecks, I mean, you see the salvage operations going on in the Republic. You've seen the Atocha, where the primary cargo is treasure. And you can understand that why treasure hunters go after those ships. But I think in many, many cases, the shipwrecks need to be mapped properly. They need to be understood properly. And sometimes they need to be protected, but not in all cases.
Let's get a caller on the line. And Charlie is with us from St. Louis, Missouri.
Hi, Robert Ballard. It's an honor to speak to you. I wish we had more people around the world like you with your ability to explore. My question is... regarding your expedition to the Black Sea and your discoveries there, do you have any plans or desire to explore similar areas around the world regarding the meltdown of the last ice age? And
well, I think there are so many places to explore, and clearly we know that during the Ice Age, the land was much lower, sea level was much lower, and we know there's a lot of fascinating Neolithic sites all around the planet. We're working with various archaeologists at Neolithic sites right here off New England, actually. But the Black Sea was particularly interesting to us because it has no oxygen below about 600 feet down to 6,000 feet. We did work on a ship that was of Byzantine age, about 1,500 years in age, and as we excavated, it was quite remarkable. We began to expose the timbers to the ship, and you could see them in the carpenter's ad marks. It was as if the ship had been made a few days ago. And we're working also with another colleague. I'm an explorer in residence for the National Geographic Society. One of my colleagues, Spencer Wells, does research and exploration in the human body through DNA of human blood. And we did a program on, you may have seen it in the Geographic, on who were the Phoenicians. And we're convinced that many of these ships, particularly the ones in the Black Sea, will not only have fascinating cargo, but they will also have perfectly preserved human beings back through time. And Spencer and I and a number of other doctors and pathologists are putting together a team. How do you respond when you start excavating some of these ships and a Phoenician appears or a Minoan appears or a sea people? So, yes, I think that the Black Sea has many, many new discoveries for us. And quite honestly, we're planning our return expeditions right now.
Charlie, thank you.
I was just going to ask one question.
If you could keep it quick, yeah.
Sure. What about areas such as off the coast of India where they think that they've discovered a possible site related
yes.
to Mohenjo-Daro and Harappa?
Yes. I'm familiar with that recent discovery. The key is that it has to, I know that some dredging operations have been done in that area, which is not recommended over archaeological sites. But yes, I've read that work. I think it's one of many examples of Neolithic sites that are going to be found on the continental shelves. One of the biggest problems we've had, actually, in our work in the Mediterranean along the Phoenician trade routes and the Roman trade routes is the activity of bottom trawling. Bottom trawling activities can reach down to in excess of 1,000 feet, and they are sweeping the ocean clear of its antiquity. So that's a serious concern that many of us have. But whether it's a human history or natural history, what's so wonderful about this new exploratory technology that we're developing for NOAA is the ability to involve children in the real-time expeditions. I started a program after finding the Titanic called the JASON Project that involves children in live exploration, and we have 1.7 million children exploring with us live. And with this new Inner Space Center that will be coming online in the next 18 months and the new ship of exploration, we hope to involve not only kids in school, but working with the Boys and Girls Clubs of America to go to their 3,500 clubs. So we see exploration of the world's oceans as a wonderful way to motivate young children to study harder. And we like to link exploration and education together, and we plan to continue doing that for as long as we can.
Thanks, Charlie.
Thank you again for your work, Beth.
Thank you.
Our guest is Robert Ballard. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. And let's see if we can get Michael's on the air. Michael is calling from Hickory, North Carolina.
Hey, I just had a quick question about a blurb in the paper I read the other day about a recent finding, possible finding of the city of Atlantis.
Again?
The yes. City of Atlantis.
Yes, there. It's been found almost regularly once a year. Yes, I read that article. I'm familiar with that. It's in the long series of discoveries of Atlantis. One always has to wait for some definitive information. Something funny about sonar data. I've spent a lifetime looking at sonar data, and in many ways you can make it whatever you want to make it, and it isn't until you really ground truth it. It'll be interesting to see what occurs. I'll make you a bet that it wasn't Atlantis.
Okay, Michael.
Right.
Thanks very much for the call. Let's see if we can get another caller in. Andrew is with us from St. Louis, Missouri.
Yeah, I was wondering, is the Bismarck and the Japanese carriers that Mr. Ballard found at Midway under the same threat of stripping as the Titanic was?
Well, ironically not. Ironically, warships are forever the possession of their country. In fact, when we found the Bismarck, we were congratulated by the German government, but asked that we not disturb the site. And it's surrounded, like the Titanic, by artifacts, and none of those have been recovered because it's against the law. The same is true of the Yorktown. But in the case of the Titanic, it fell into a totally different legal regime because it had been abandoned. It was up for grabs, and when we found it, we sought to protect it initially, but we were told that the existing admiralty laws, we could not become an owner of the Titanic unless we agreed to salvage it until it was completely gone, which was certainly not our wish. But the laws have evolved, and we're trying to continue to evolve those laws so that you can preserve these sites in situ and create underwater museums. We see the day when you'll install underwater vehicle systems at the Titanic. We're doing it right now for NOAA's National Marine Sanctuary Program. We had a meeting yesterday of installing camera systems on shipwrecks in NOAA's sanctuary in Thunder Bay so that people can have access to them in real time. And we will be installing those systems within the next year and a half and be able to access it with 10 gigabits of bandwidth on Internet too. So, no, we see that more and more we're going to be able to use the technology to not only explore, which is critical. We need to explore our planet. But once we make discoveries of natural history, natural wonders, or human cultural sites, that we now have the technology to make them accessible, not just to the lucky that get to go down in a submarine, but to the public at large through this new technology.
Andrew, thanks for the phone call.
Thank you.
And Bob Ballard, thank you so much for your time today.
Thank you, Neil. Let's get out to sea again.
Let's do it. Bob Ballard is the president of the Institute for Exploration, discoverer of the Titanic. His new book, Return to Titanic, A New Look at the world's most famous lost ship. We spoke to him from the studios of member station WSHU in Fairfield, Connecticut. And again, you can see some of those pictures at npr.org. Iris here tomorrow with Science Friday. See you Monday. In Washington, I'm Neil Conan, NPR News.